Nigga be a leader, not a follower.
What?
Master P said that.
I did it again. What's up, right?
I know. Cedric Muhammad.
I know what y'all is asking yourself. You gonna ever fall off?
Cedric Muhammad.
No.
Now let me give you an example of what goes on behind the door. There's a picture on the screen. I threw it up. It's of John Malone and Rupert Murdoch. They're hugging one another. If you don't know who John Malone is, that's an example of what I'm referring to. One of the most powerful men walking the earth through his media influence. Rupert Murdoch, I hope I don't have to make the case for him, the power that he has through media, satellite communication, financial news. Gives money to both parties. That's why I think we look like a bunch of unenlightened people to only deal with one political party when the most powerful people in the world deal with both parties at least. You gotta ask yourself a question. Why is it okay for Rupert Murdoch to deal with both political parties but you can't? Here's the article, July 29th, Financial Times. It says Malone and Murdoch, quote, Malone says Murdoch owes me a favor. The DirecTV executive went to News Corp. Insight into links between two moguls. This is what goes on behind closed doors. Rupert Murdoch owes fellow media mogul John Malone a favor, according to the Liberty Media chairman. In a video interview that gives an insight into the relationship between two of the biggest figures in the media world, Mr. Malone told the Financial Times that he had let Chase Carey, the former chief executive of satellite broadcaster DirecTV, leave for News Corp this year because Mr. Murdoch needed help at the top of the company. Because he was overextended personally, Rupert needed Chase. You all are very intelligent. I think you're getting what I don't have to make a rant about. Do I have to rant about this? One mogul loaning a top employee to another company? You don't call that collusion or collaboration? Again, because he was overextended personally, Rupert needed Chase. Once Peter Chernin, Mr. Murdoch's closest lieutenant, left, there was a burden on Rupert. I don't think Rupert even realized how big his company had become and how tough it was to have 20 people reporting to you personally. Mr. Malone controls a broad range of media assets from DirecTV and the Discovery Channel to QVC and Liberty Global, an international cable television company. His path has consistently crossed that of Mr. Murdoch as a partner or a competitor, and he has sometimes seemed to get the better of the News Corp chairman. Almost 3 years ago, Mr. Malone swapped a stake he had in part secretly built up in News Corp for Mr. Murdoch's interest in DirecTV. Asked what the quid pro quo was for letting Mr. Carey become chief operating officer of News Corp, Mr. Malone said, "My conversation with Rupert was, quote, Rupert, I know you need him and you owe us one. And that was it. If Rupert owes you one, you can bank on it. You'll collect it somewhere in the future in some way undefined." See, this is the real world of business. Unspoken things, debts, loyalty, favors, cashed in, secret buying of stock. News Corp declined to comment. The comments shed light on the inner workings of the relationship between two of the biggest figures in the media. Mr. Malone indicated his high opinion of Mr. Murdoch as a businessman and said, "We're very friendly. We talk regularly." But he disagreed with Mr. Murdoch's pronouncement that the outlook for the media industry was unanimously bearish for the next 3 to 5 years. Rupert is more heavily invested in those areas of the media industry that are under pressure, typically print and broadcast, Mr. Malone said. Other parts of the industry were doing better. Cable television has been okay. It continues to grow a little slower than we'd like or historically, but it continues to have growth in revenue and cash flow. Rupert Murdoch and John Malone, their relationship, this is what I'm talking about. I'm giving you a view from the top of this world's pyramid. And there's even people above these two. These are two men that do business with both political parties to get what they want. Real recognizes real. John Malone recognizes the power of Rupert Murdoch and vice versa, as I once used to say, until corrected. Mr. Malone agreed with Mr. Murdoch on the economy. I think he is particularly bearish on the economy, and I agree with him. I think this is going to be a long slog. There is just way too much debt in the West, and we're starting to be borne down by that debt. The article, Malone, quote, Murdoch, or colon, Murdoch owes me a favor. What's that all about? John Malone, DirecTV, and many other entities, Discovery Channel, QVC, Liberty Global, and Rupert Murdoch. I'll let that sink in, man. I'm going to say it one more time over this hot instrumental. Not left, right, or center, but 5, 10, 85%er. Okay, let me get into my defense, constructive criticism of Dambisa Moyo. She appeared on the Colbert Show. I want to thank Wolfie. My people out in Alaska put me on to the audio and made me aware of this. Dambisa Moyo on the Colbert Show. Commentary by me.
My guest tonight says that we need to rethink how we send aid to Africa. Evidently, they're as sick of mono as we are. Please welcome Dambisa Moyo! Thank you so much for coming on. I love this book. It's called Dead Aid, Why Aid Is Not Working and How There Is a Better Way for Africa. And I love this because for years I've felt guilty for doing nothing. And now I know that's the best thing I could have been doing. Am I right?
Absolutely not. The book is basically saying aid doesn't work, but there's a better way.
That's what I've always said. I've said bootstraps. Let's send those people's bootstraps. We'll first send them boots, then bootstraps, so they can pull themselves up, right?
Which is a much better way to support Africa in achieving the long-term goals of growth and reducing poverty, and that's what this book is about.
So if we're not going to send them aid, does that mean we'll have more money for ourselves? Because we can give it to those guys at AIG, because they... Those guys need some real help. What's your answer then? What's better than aid? Because all I hear from your Bob Geldofs and your Bonos and your Jolies and your Cloonies is that we got to aid these people. What's wrong with that?
That is a very negative message. Really, the book is about some very, very positive ways in which we can support businesses and entrepreneurs in Africa. And that's what this is about. So through trade, through foreign direct investment, through building more in the capital market.
You're talking about let the free market handle this thing, right? You're talking about the free market.
In a regulated fashion, it works.
But
sure.
If it's regulated, it's not free market. So let's just call it free market. haven't we tried the free market in Africa already? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, how did Africa get so poor? Did you guys have a subprime bubble burst or something like that?
It feels like it. It's actually been 60 years of $1 trillion that's gone from government to government aid, and it hasn't worked. It's created larger poverty pockets across the continent.
Why shouldn't our government give, money to other governments in Africa for them to distribute among their people? What's wrong with that? What goes wrong?
Very often it ends up used for corruption. It causes inflation. It causes a debt burden, which is unsustainable.
Wait a second. We have corruption, inflation, and a debt burden here. Is someone aiding us and we don't know it?
No, the intentions are very good. They're rightly placed, but unfortunately we're using a model that we all know doesn't work. And basically the book is about the models that do work, the things that have been working for China and India and for places like South Africa and Botswana. So
things like CARE and UNICEF are just pyramid schemes, right?
Well...
Because we know it doesn't. If we know it doesn't work, which is what you just said, madam, and I believe you, if we know it doesn't work, then those people must know they're lining somebody's pocket. Are they just institutions?
The point of the matter is we want to focus on job creation. And the thing about the large multilateral institutions is that they're focused on providing band-aid solutions instead of long-term growth opportunities for people to have jobs.
But what are the opportunities for investment in Africa? Don't those diamond companies invest all the time?
There's lots of things to invest in Africa. There's telecommunications, through mobile phones technology, there's banking sector.
Where's it working in Africa? What are the countries, I should say, that aren't getting aid, but it is their economy is working.
It's countries like South Africa and Botswana, for example, both of whom do not rely on aid to the extent that other countries do. More recently, we've seen countries like Ghana show very positive strides towards economic development. And we are seeing some positive news. There are now 15 stock markets across the continent, and there are some good stories. Even this year, for this year, with all the bad things that are happening around the world, the IMF is forecasting Africa to grow around 3%. We can't say that about a lot of other places in the global economy. So it's a very positive story. Things are happening on the continent. That's what's really important to stress.
So you realize that by putting out this book and saying these things, especially on national television in the United States, you are blowing your chance of doing a duets album with Bono. You know that, right? Is that a sacrifice
Sadly,
you're willing to make?
You know what? I'm really sad about that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Dambisa Moyo, the book is Dead Age.
Okay. You can read my blog. I go into my critique in more detail there. She does a good job of pointing out some of the value of trade with China as opposed to the West, specifically as it relates to developing Africa's infrastructure. I agree with that. But what comes across even in that interview with Colbert and in the book is, I won't call it a naivete because I believe she knows better, but it's not marketable for her to do it. She says that the aid in Africa is well-intentioned. Government-to-government aid. I'm not talking about famine relief. I'm not talking about mosquito nets, malaria. She's talking about multilateral institutions like the IMF and the World Bank and then government-to-government aid when France gives a Francophone country aid, okay? Or when America gives aid or when Britain gives aid to a country directly. She's saying that's well-intentioned. I disagree. That aid is not well-intentioned. It's designed to keep Africa in an export-driven model with certain leaders in power. I mean, Dambisa does not mention anything about the covert operations, of course, that go on and have been going on in Africa to get people in power. Aid is a part of that story. It's not just government-to-government aid. There's military assistant programs where you wonder why a lot of the leaders in Africa or even around the world are military leaders. Well, it's because they're getting their funding from military assistance programs. This is how leaders emerged in Vietnam. This is how leaders emerge in African countries. All of a sudden, somebody will pop up, a rebel group, new Hummers, new weapons, new ammunition. So the aid is not really well-intentioned. It is intended to put people in power that will open the door to the riches of that nation or military bases. You saw a lot of this after 9/11. A lot of military aid was given to countries around the Horn of Africa, trying to bribe them into allowing U.S. Army, Air Force, etc. to have bases or just opportunities to fly through rights, places where they can park equipment. All of this was going on behind the scenes in the form of aid. So the aid is not well-intentioned. Furthermore, the same motivation that's behind aid is the same motivation behind these wicked trade agreements that African nations are twisted, their arms are twisted into signing. They don't have to sign it. She's right. But through WTO agreements and the EPA agreements, these economic partnership agreements, bad trade agreements between Europe and Africa, there's pressure to sign those. So Dambisa's remedy is for African nations to now go onto the private capital markets to impress the ratings agencies, Standard & Poor's, Moody's, Fitch, and the international bankers into persuading them into buying African debt. Well, the same thing happens a little more indirectly. Conditions are imposed. Suggestions are made that are not really suggestions. If you want to raise money, if you want X and X bank to buy your debt, this is the kind of change that they would like to have in your fiscal policy. It's the same thing. So Dambisa, in effect, is saying that the IMF and the World Bank and European governments are worse than international banks, credit rating agencies, and investors. Or she's saying that the first group is more powerful than the latter group. They're the same people. That's the main, I would say, point of contention that I have with the premise that she starts from. Aid is no worse than trade, or I should say, aid doesn't come to do any more harm than bad trade agreements do and African nations going into debt on foreign international bond markets would do. The root of the problem, another part of the root of the problem, is the currency issue in Africa. You don't have stable currency, so you would not really even be able to raise money in Africa. Nobody's going to put their money in an inflating currency, a devalued currency. Why would I buy the debt of an African country that I know their currency is going to be worth less next year? Why would I loan somebody money if they're going to pay me back in less valuable dollars than the ones that I gave them? That's what inflation does. Nobody is going to do that. The third point is the obvious solution is greater unity. She hints at it in her book, saying that African countries should come together and try to borrow money from the international financial community, private capital markets as a unit. and that they should enter into trade agreements as a unit. Well, don't stop there, Dambisa, is my point. Why would you stop there? You don't just want two or three countries united. You want all 53. Africa will always be dependent. There will always be dependencies. Even if you got rid of aid, you would have a trade dependency. You would have a debt dependency. You would have a currency dependency. You know you're going to have a military dependency, because where's Africa's army? So I think probably the best way for me to say it is that maybe Dead Aid, the book that she wrote, exaggerates the finality or the power of the solution that she offers. Aid is maybe one-fifth of the problem. So I'm glad that she brought it up, but it's not a holistic solution. It's not a causal factor. Aid is part of the legacy of the colonial economy that African nations inherited and never unwound. It's never been unwound. Aid is a part of it. Debt is a part of it. Trade agreements is a part of it. That legacy includes ethnic and tribal conflict, weak currencies. These are all part of the legacy of the colonial economy. Her solution does not address that. Okay. Cedric Muhammad, Black Coffee Program. You can tell me what you think. August 12th, 2009. It's a great read. You can read this book in like 2 days. I recommend it. Give you a great primer for you to explore other issues. You can go from there. Cedric Muhammad, Black Coffee Program. August 12, 2009, CedricMuhammad.com, BlackElectorate.com, BlackCoffeeChannel.com. Some of you on Facebook, I try to keep up with the messages during the show on the show page. T.O., again, my favorite show. The Tiny and Toya episode this week was outstanding. But again, my brother T.O. continues to dig deep. Let's get into it. It's an interesting subject. Some of you may want to pull out the Muslim program. If you're not a Muslim follower, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, don't worry about it. You'll be able to follow. But this is about freedom of choice. Got two ways we can go with this. Race mixing, should it be prohibited? Or should our people be free to choose to stay with the people of the race that enslaved black people? Because that's what this is really all about. Stop faking the funk. Some of you all said Mo was gangster. She was hating on T.O.'s choice of a white woman. She wasn't hating hard enough, because she did not say, she was not truthful. She was not forthright about why she had a problem with T.O. dating this young white college student who's a model. Mo didn't keep it real. That's why she had to apologize. The young lady, she knew that Mo hated on her because she was white. But because Mo didn't keep it real, T.O. told her she was about to bounce. I love T.O. All of the bad memories of him as a Philadelphia Eagles, doing the sit-ups in the driveway, boycotting my man Donovan McNabb, they're all forgotten. This show has brought T.O. and I back together. Listen to T.O.'s publicist, Mo, hating on T.O.'s selection of a Caucasian companion.
Who are you taking to basketball? Because we haven't talked about that just yet.
Somebody that I met in Miami.
Carrie's tall, hot, sexy. Everything that Mo has been trying to steer me away from.
You want to know her?
No. Why would you know her?
That's all right. He don't want to answer the questions, but when I meet her, I'll be knowing her social security number, her blood type, her last five addresses, and everything else. I'm not worried about it. He don't have to tell me that.
My name is Carrie.
Carrie. Yeah, I never met her.
K-A-R-I. Okay, now what?
Carrie is a girl that I've been seeing, and Carrie is not only just a beauty, but she's a very, very smart, intelligent girl.
Mo, you've never met Carrie. This is Mo.
Hi.
I haven't heard too much about you.
Probably not a good thing.
I hadn't.
Okay, now check out some of the subliminal hatred coming back from Carrie. This is T.O.'s Caucasian companion. She's subliminally spitting it back, if you notice it.
Introduced her yet, because I knew she wouldn't approve right away.
So, Carrie, what do you do?
I'm a student and I'm a
mom. Mm-hmm. I didn't like Carrie from the beginning. Okay, oh, so you have another job. Mm-hmm. Doing what? Yeah.
Bartending.
Okay, now listen, family, I got to help some of you that don't listen to the show. Mo is black, Carrie is white. Mo does not like Carrie because she's white. That's all. But look at all the other reasons she brings up to not like T.O.'s choice of a Caucasian companion. Now, Mo, should race mixing be prohibited, or should T.O. she have the right to choose?
At a club?
Yeah, that's usually where you bartend.
It could be a strip club. The way you looking coming all up in here like that. What you laughing for?
I mean, she was cute, but she's young. She's inexperienced in life. She doesn't know what she wants to do with herself. I mean, she's a college student. What's Cheryl gonna do? Go visit her on campus?
Cheryl is already in his infamous T.O. mode, and honestly, it's lights, camera, action for him. And Monique and Carrie, he's oblivious to the battles that's going on between them two.
Did that look too much on my jacket?
You doing too much, but that's pretty much how you like to do it. When there's a knock at the door, Mama Marilyn walks in. This is the time I wouldn't even want to be Carrie. Here she is, a 6 foot tall, brunette white girl. She's got five family members staring her down.
Now look, that was Keita. Keita is the one that mentioned her skin color. Mo was harping on other things.
Carrie, Mom. Carrie, that's my mom.
Miss Marilyn's never met Carrie before, and you got this black protective mama from Alabama wondering, who is this girl? Is this somebody I'm gonna see again? Who knows?
Let Carrie get in.
Carrie, this gonna be a family shot.
She can get in?
Carrie made me mad because we're taking pictures. It's friends, it's family. What is she doing here? She wanna be an actress? She need to act like this is not her scene, because it's not. Get her ass on up out of here.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Bye.
Right before Cheryl was getting ready to leave for the Essie, I wanted to have a little one-on-one with him, just kind of set him straight.
She's 22 years old. What do you mean?
What do you mean what I mean?
Come on, Mo. Cheryl. Like, Mo, this is my life.
I've been through
You didn't
been through enough bull. That's the bottom line.
Right.
You done been through enough.
Right.
And you sitting up here, I mean, okay, she's beautiful. I give it to her. Striking, gorgeous, or whatever. But I mean, besides being a little toy that you tied around your arm, what is she gonna give you? She can't offer you nothing else besides a good look and a nice little
We've
look.
Already kind of developed some chemistry. I like her, she likes me. And it's not a matter of like she's 22 or what, a 23. She
doesn't understand what you're looking for and what you want out of life and everything else or whatever. You are at a point where you need more, and she ain't gonna be able to give it to you, nor is
How do you know what she is able to give
I'm
you?
I'm just saying, baby, look, if the bitch came out here.
She's not no bitch.
Okay, all right. You wanna be protective of these little
No, I'm just saying, just be more, a little bit more respectful than that.
Okay, but you're not her daddy, though, so you ain't gotta defend her like that. But whatever, okay.
And you're not her mom either.
I'm not trying to be your mama, Cheryl. All I'm trying to do is be a good friend and look out for you. Keep on saying what you want out of life, and you ready to take it to the next level. Elementary school.
Mo wouldn't even give Carrie a chance.
I'm just saying it's time for you to step up and start dating a real woman. That's all I'm saying.
Okay,
and
well,
quit dating these kids.
She was very rude, and at this point, I felt like I had to stand my ground.
All I'm saying is I'm here. I'm trying to help, you know.
Well, at this point, like, we're friends. We don't know where it may go, but of course, Mo didn't want to hear any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, she's in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, she's in the picture or you out of the picture? One of the two.
Oh, I ain't going nowhere, but I'm just saying.
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, you either going to have to deal with it or not deal with it. That's it.
Yeah, go on choosing. I hope she chooses you. Enjoy yourself.
Okay. Any thoughts on that? I had to break that down subliminally. She did not mention color once, if I heard correctly. Keita brought up color twice. That T.O.'s mom from Alabama would be seeing a white woman, white girl. She said that twice. Mo, who has the biggest problem, did not keep it real. So she had to end up apologizing.
I saw how Mo treated Carrie at the ESPYs, and honestly, her behavior was unacceptable. And this is one time where Mo knew she needed to get it together and apologize.
After the ESPYs, Terrell and I kind of had a talk. I've known Terrell for a long time, and he's not just a business partner or, you know, a friend. He's really family to me. You know, after seeing you guys together, it's clear to me that you feel something for him. I will honestly say that I was wrong, you know what I mean, for coming at you that way.
I feel like maybe you could have got a chance to know a little bit about me or see us interact for more than 30 seconds when I walked in the room before you, you know, interrogated me.
You were a little bit too much.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And again, that's why I'm here apologizing. So I apologize to you, and I apologize to you.
I have to take Keita's lead. You know, sometimes I might need to step back a little bit. The only thing I can do as a friend is close my eyes, cross my fingers, and pray to God that he finally lands a good one. I'll do anything to please her.
Mo has been my friend, and she's like family. I'm just meeting Carrie. We've developed some chemistry, so I'm just hoping we all can just get along.
All right. You weigh in. I've dropped my exegesis on that. Mo would have been better off just saying, she's white, I don't feel comfortable with you, with a white girl, your mother, your family, whatever. Just be 100% real with it. Stop talking around the issue. Keep it real. I'm with T.O. T.O. has the right to choose. He chose this person. Mo didn't like it. I love what T.O. said. Either she stays or you go. I'm running this. I'm running my inner circle. But Mo hurt herself by not being honest. Let's run over to the Tiny and Toya show. A great show. If you're an entrepreneur, if you're someone in between careers, a married mother with children, single mother with children, so you've been in the shadow of a powerful, dominant man, this show was for you. Toya, the ex-wife of Lil Wayne, now wanting to write a book. I'll give you my thoughts on it. Let me play the audio. Here's the whole thing. Toya exploring writing a book deal, getting a book deal for her memoirs.
Thank you. I've been writing and reading my journal and going back and looking at all the different things I've been through. It just made me think, like, I could really turn my life into a story. I don't have a problem with sharing it with the world or sharing it with other people that's going through those things I've been through to maybe help them out. When you sitting down, you reading something like, wow, she went through what I went through and she made it, so why can't I? I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna turn my story into a book. I went to Phaedra to let her know my idea about the book because I know that she knows a lot of people. She had clients that has written books before, and I thought that she'd be the perfect person to have the project done. She set up all these different meetings for me, and now I'm getting ready to go to New York. Yes. Do you have anything that's like sort of dressy, something like what she have on now?
Like, yeah, business wear.
The whole interview thing just really makes me nervous because I never had a job. I never been on an interview.
A pencil skirt. Let's see the back of that. Okay, with the little ruching. And that might look.
What you saying?
We finna make Toya into a little business lady.
I don't know what they're going to ask me. I just don't really like surprises. It makes me nervous, but I'm ready for the trip.
That's the only thing I don't like is that I have to.
It's Reginae's name.
I don't give a damn.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a friend. She's telling Toya the tattoo has to go. You got to change your dress. I love this. A mentor. Someone who's going to be totally honest with you. Not a sycophant or a yes woman. Get rid of the tattoo, she's saying. We got a business interview.
When you are a professional woman, the tattoo says something in certain settings that you don't want it to say. I want them to not prejudge you for anything that's not really you. And people say you can't judge a book by a cover, but if the cover don't look right, people don't open the book. So they gonna just ask you, where did you do your time? Where did you do your time?
Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
Welcome. How you doing?
Nice to meet you.
All right.
Hey.
How you doing?
All right.
You guys can have a seat. Phaedra Park contacted me and told me that you guys are looking to start your business or enhance your business. And that's one of the things that I do on a daily basis. So just tell me a little bit about yourselves. You might want to start first, Toya.
I'm looking to start writing a book. And I want to get some advice.
Now, one of the things with starting a business, you have to do research. Think about, where does Toya want her book? Does she want it in the big name bookstores? Where do you see your book?
Yeah, the big Barnes and Noble.
But when we start a business, we have to first be passionate about it. And if I start something today and I know that it might not be successful, that I have so much love and passion for it, I'm going to continue to do it until I get to that point.
If I plan on being a businesswoman, that I really need to take her advice and listen. Like, I don't just want to put a book out and it flop.
What about you, Tiny?
Well, you know, I'm starting a new production company, a young girl group and an older girl group. So I'm really trying to mold them and get them ready. You know, it's very fresh, it's new, and I'm thinking about doing a little early showcase and get opinions from big names that tell me what they think and what direction they think we should probably be heading, or just give us some advice.
Hey, you're on the right path for that, because you just said something key. I've talk to people who have their own label to get some advice from them. That's what's very important, is those who've done it, learn from their mistakes. Don't make their same mistakes.
Right.
But ask them, what was the mistakes you made? Because I don't want to go that route.
I feel like she was getting information from us, and she was putting everything into perspective and letting us know this is the direction you should go. And I think it was very helpful for us, both of us.
I love this show. Two women getting advice. Business, they saw a business consultant, and they saw, had a friend getting Toya dressed up properly for a business interview. See, this right here. Let me read a comment. Somebody put a comment on my blog. They don't like that I talk about this show. I'm sure they're not alone. Let me see if I can find this. It was a sister. Thought she was being honest. She wants to know, why would I talk about this show? And I have a quick answer to that, which would be, well, where else would you be able to apply what it is that you say you believe, unless it's a real situation? This is why I don't really like political, ideological talk that much, because it allows you to just react and talk about scenarios that exist in somebody else's reality, I guess. But here you have Tiny and Toya. Now you run your political ideology on that. But here's a good comment, which I appreciate. Miss Ann, she wrote on my blog on August 5th. She said, Cedric, this show is against everything you believe in. Now, she's talking about Tiny and Toya. So Ms. Ann, she wrote me. She says, Cedric, this show is against everything you believe in. How could you advocate this, let alone co-sign on this mess? Tiny and Toya are just two hood rats who slept with the right men. Now they are paid and famous as well. For what? They can't teach young girls how to do a damn thing, but what they themselves already know. Yeah, Tiny had a career, but her 15 minutes of fame are up. Stop the madness. This is what Ms. Ann wrote to me. She says, and no, Tiny will not have the young lady sing about anything positive, because in the A, Atlanta, it's all about stripping and booty shake. Freaknik is alive and well. Now, Ms. Ann, just for mentioning Freaknik, you get a salute. I never went to Freaknik, by the way. Miss Ann says, Cedric, this show is against everything you believe in. How could you advocate this, let alone co-sign on this? Well, I love the fact that here are two women that Miss Ann says are just hood rats who slept with the right man. That's her depiction of them. Getting job interviews, getting job training, getting professional and business development, being honest about their problems. I love this show, Miss Ann.
We want you guys, ladies, to get to a point to where your passion, something that you love, is going to make you money and keep making money for the long term, not the short term.
All right, Miss Carter, what's the business?
Hey, Miss
Carter. Hey, they let me in.
I'm excited.
All right, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous, but I'm ready.
I've been through so much, from my family situation to my situation with Wayne. All the things I've been through is coming back to me. You know, it's making me feel like I've been through all of that and all of the down things in my life, and now something positive is finally starting to happen.
I always tell people to err on being more conservative than, you know, friendly. Like, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. You know, and up in New York, they don't always do that. But, we're Southern women, so I think it's proper for us to do it. But just, you know.
Yeah, I feel like this New York trip is marking a new step in my life. Because I've always been afraid to do things and afraid of failure, I feel like now I'm finally taking that step forward.
Go in, give him a firm handshake, you know, look him in the eye. Because when you look somebody in the eye, they have to respect you. I mean, that's just first class. If you do that, I mean, we'll ace it tomorrow. You'll do fine.
Okay.
You will do fine. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So we're ready to roll.
I love this. They're getting ready to do business. I love this.
Thank you. Hey. New York City, baby. Ah, we made it.
I know, right?
We in New York City.
I know.
Girl, we get ready to do it, baby.
Yes.
Oh, it's so pretty today. We made it. Thank you,
beautiful
Jesus.
Day, y'all.
So I got the bio of everybody we meet. So you can just have a little brief look, and then you'll know what they look like. So when they walk up, you're going to be like...
being in New York, I was feeling good because I'm here. I got the chance to meet with these people. Phaedra helped me set these things up. At one point, like, I was afraid. But I'm like, I'm going to take advantage of this.
They going to ask you, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Oh, and that's the question that I hate so much. Girl, I hate to see Lil Wayne's ex-wife. Like, that just makes me, ugh. I want to do my own thing. Like, I don't want you to put my book with Wayne book. That ties me back to the whole...
Yeah.
I'm trying to get out and do my own thing.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey,
this is my girlfriend.
Hey, hi. Nice to meet you. Phaedra set up a meeting with me to meet with Rob Kenner and Jamie from Sister to Sister and the author named Mitzi Miller.
Okay, you're writing a book.
Why do you want to do a book?
What's your book going to be about?
Phaedra set up all these different meetings for me because it's going to help me with my meeting with the agency. I guess we meet with them tomorrow, so we'll find out something from there.
Exciting.
Yeah.
So when you say memoir, do you mean like Corinne Steffens memoir, like Nas's baby mom, like?
No, it's not a tell-all.
Okay. Let me tell you something. When America opened the floodgates and let all us Italians in, what do you think they were doing it for? Because they were trying to save us from poverty? No, they did it because they needed us. They needed us to build their cities and dig their subways and to make them richer. The Carnegies and the Rockefellers, they needed worker bees, and there we were. But some of us didn't want to swarm around their hive and lose who we were. We wanted to stay Italian and preserve the things that meant something to us, honor and family and loyalty. And some of us wanted a piece of the action. Now, we weren't educated like the Americans, but we had the balls to take what we wanted. The J.P. Morgans, they were crooks and killers too, but that was the business, right? The American way.
Shedrick Muhammad. Shedrick Muhammad. We take yours while you pout about it. Truck, step out, please want to crowd around it. You can see me on Optimum TV. I'm on your bathroom, turn the light out, scream Bloody Mary. 1, 2, 3, Sheik ain't your usual friend. But I can set you up like Kaiser, walk straight at the end. I'm done with ice and charms. I'm trying to ice my whole passion when I'm gone. Pull up a clap, Shedrick Muhammad. Meet him, I greet him. Kiss his feet for freedom. Tell him thank you, Lord. Cause on earth I was getting bored. Now resurrect me back to this cat or sheep. So I can make the sound and give back the cat this week. It's 2:30, 6:02. Need brunch for you, that's like a cat versus pit bull. Gun, no flip bull. Keep hunger and plan for the future. Cause you figure you gon' be older way longer than you gon' be younger.
Keep alive, money pounds.
Shedrick Muhammad.
Keep alive, money pounds.
Shedrick Muhammad. Shedrick Muhammad.
Only time to tell how the clock tick. I really love him, but I'm still a hostage. Two personalities, check the posture. Smoke out the mouth, flare out the nostrils. Think of death, then life seems scary. I pass the graveyard, seeing people here married. I ain't chilling till I'm out parachuting. Race my man in mountain climbing for about 10 diamonds. 25,000 apiece, forget street. Trying to own the island, forget about wildin'. Try riding in the car that be gliding. If I showed you where I live, you would think I was hiding. Slink brick, the chicks that don't speak English. Wake up in Trinidad, like touching, I'm rich. Come back, private jet, live on set.
Shedrick Muhammad.
Money pounds, bet, you're eating live. Money pounds, bet, you're eating right. Money pounds, bet, you're eating the night. You'll see the light, the key to life. Money pounds, bet, you're eating live. Money pounds, bet, you're eating right. Money pounds, bet, you're eating right.
Shedrick Muhammad.
With the hotness, whenever we drop this monotonous, for y'all to keep hating, cause y'all never gonna stop us. I keep my rock spotless and my girls topless. Take time, try to figure out who the lock is. Spare no one, kick rhymes like Shogun. You scared to blow one, get robbed with your own gun. If I don't respect you, I'ma check you. And if I don't kiss you, I'ma peck you. Right before I wet you, I sneeze on tracks and bless you. I'm special, and if you like working out, then I'm gonna stretch you. Hustling is dead, but we still get red. Dirty spots in the bakeries, we get back bread. And y'all y'all said my money's spent, but it's an event. So when the feds come, the dogs can't get a cent. And my story, self-explanatory, that I'm the hottest thing on the street, and y'all ain't got nothing for me.
Keep it alive, yeah. Money counts, fat, what you eating like?
Cedric Muhammad.
Money counts, fat, what you eating right? Mm-hmm. Money counts, fat, what you sleep at night? You'll see the light, yeah. Keep it alive.
Cedric Muhammad.
Money counts, fat, what you eating like? Money counts, fat, what you eating right? Money counts, fat, money counts.
This is a beat that I can freak. Just drop the rim, left it up with the ill. I'm up, know my skill. X from the grill, spit em up, split em up, wet em up. Watch em come,
get em
up, set em up. You do dirt, you get dirt. Trick, click, step back like I did work. Ain't no bluffing game, you think I'm playing? Can you land? To where the junk
yard
can? Mom's at home praying, coming home, but you not. You sitting up in the trunk, starting to rap. And hell is hot, though, because I'm here now, baby. It's going down, baby. Get the 4 pound, baby. And let off up in it. Especially if he think he bigger. Get my mother trigger. Get I, can I get
Shedrick
mine?
Muhammad.
Is it gone? You can make it represent one
he
time.
Lied.
It's song.
Money counts, bet what you mean like. Money counts, bet what you mean right.
Shedrick Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad.
Wow, y'all have some comments coming in. Ms. Ann's comments on my blog about the Tiny and Toya show. Got a response. Let me read something, though. I got a series of messages here on TO. Someone says, I disagree. I think that Mo and Keita would accept a better choice for T.O. like his ex, even though she is half black and half white, because she's older, more mature, and seasoned. T.O. knows the issue already. That's all he dates and parties with are white girls. I think they would accept a white one that was better, because that's all they see anyway. T.O. already knows that they wish he would lean toward the brown sugar, but he does him. They got to keep it on his mind. He loves them for it. That's why you love the show. It is dialectic and eclectic and really what goes on amongst our men, especially the stars. But most of the male stars don't have a Mo and Keita in their life. Now, I don't know. That's a good point. If the Caucasian companion, Carrie, had been of a higher class or older, would Mo have not been hated? I don't know. I still think she would have hated. Janine from Hartford says, wasn't T.O.'s former fiance white? Correct me if I'm wrong, said. The fiance that I saw in episode number one, she wasn't white. So I only think he had one fiance. Cameron from Paterson, New Jersey, he makes some good point, two good points. As far as Ms. Ann's comments, he says, I'm sensing some elitism in the comment you read from your blog, said. Let me read the comment again on my blog. Ms. Ann, she writes, Cedric, this show is against everything you believe in. How could you advocate this, let alone co-sign on this mess? Tiny and Toya are just two hood rats who slept with the right men. Now they are paid and famous as well. For what? They can't teach young girls how to do a damn thing but what they themselves already know. Yeah, Tiny had a career, but her 15 minutes of fame are up. Stop the madness. To that, Cameron says, I'm sensing some elitism in the comment you read from your blog, said. Tiny was successful way before T.I. She was a platinum-selling artist when he was broke. We talk about empowering all black people here on this show, not just the wealthy blacks. Now, I will, Cameron is hitting on something that may be the basis of another rant on another show. But I will say this. This show and I attract all, you know, the whole spectrum of black people in America and around the world. This is a fact. But the folks who do tend to comment a lot are those part of my network and family who are more politically and ideologically or morally, spiritually inclined. Now, Jesus sat down and dined with the sinners. We know this. His work was amongst the poor. He did not judge. He did not cast the first stone. It is interesting, Cameron, that people who know this about me, they know the work that I do with people in the street, people who are criminals, ex-felons, my work in the hip-hop community, my track record, my point of view on suffering and the value of it, redeeming people. I think there are people who don't like that about me. They just want to hear the Ten Commandments, or maybe the restrictive laws of Islam. They want to hear me Bible thump or Quran thump. They want to hear me go deep into the progressive political writings or conservative economic ideology. That's what they want. They don't want the nuance of culture or maybe what comes out of my heart sometimes. So I think, I don't know if I'd call it wealth elitism, Cameron, but there's a level of discomfort that I know people have with me because of the broad range of people that I'm willing to associate, not just poor blacks or young blacks or hip blacks, but also whites, very powerful whites that I deal with bring discomfort to people. I think that's a great point. I don't know Ms. Ann. I don't know. I may know her. I don't know who she is. She didn't identify herself. I don't have any friends that I call Ms. Ann. But I think Ms. Ann is saying, I respect your strong moral stances, your desire to see black people better. I don't see how that is reconciled with this show. However, the clip that I just played, I think, makes it clear that the women that Ms. Ann is referring to as hood rats who slept with the right men are trying to make themselves better, trying to start businesses, trying to be honest about their feelings, trying to get therapy for trauma, emotional pain that they haven't gotten over. I think that's progressive. Now, if you were to go ask Tiny Toya, have you read Frantz Fanon's Wretched of the Earth, or have you read Message to the Black Man by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, they're going to say no. But does that make them any less? Good point. This may be a subject of a rant once it formulates more in my mind. Cameron from Paterson, New Jersey also said that T.O. clip shows how women can get around a man and want to be the boss. Mo, she told T.O. She told T.O. what he needed to do and what she was going to do. I'm sure it's out of concern, but it happens all the time. Not all women do this, just the ones who act this way. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Mo was telling T.O. what to do, and she was hiding what her real problem was with the young lady, that she was white. T.O., I think, picked up on both of those. One, you're not going to tell me what to do when I'm writing your check. Two, you don't like her because she's white, but you're not saying it, so I'm going to hear you out and just ignore you. That's what I think T.O. did. Also, Cam says that clip that we played for the our number 5 intro is not completely true. He says there was a large labor pool of black people in the country at that time, but they didn't want to use that labor. The goal was to whiten the country by increasing European immigration and decreasing African immigration and Northern immigration. That interpretation is slightly revisionist. I agree. The only time when the black labor pool of this country was desired in the 19th century was when there's been a war. Whenever there's a war and there's a labor shortage and immigration is cut off, similar to what's going on now, that's when black labor is valued. But it requires immigration completely being stopped, and it requires national security, a war. Good comment, Cam. Careful listener that you are. Janine from Hartford, she says, I'm going to keep it real. Sleeping with the right man is important. Women who understand the power of our sexuality while keeping ourselves morally grounded can obtain happiness or success. Now, gosh, you're getting to something kind of important. Why do you all think Dambisa Moyo is seen in New York Times in different poses? Time Magazine and New York Times have Dambisa looking different than she appears in other publications. Have you noticed? I'm on my job. Janine is right. The power of the woman to attract with her form and her body. White people understand this, I think, more than we do when it comes to media. Now, let me show you the shots of Dambisa Moyo that are, you know, either on her website or on popular sites. I think I have them. Get on the screen if you can. Oh, that's the wrong pose. Let me do the New York Times shot of Dambisa. Here's Dambisa Time Magazine. See how she got the hip leaning over to the right a little bit? Yeah, I'm on it. This is how she appears in Time Magazine. The lean to the right, the hip. I know all about the science of this. Why? This is part of her appeal. This is part of her power. Sister from Zambia, queen of the planet Earth. Folks want to see the hips, dips, and potato chips, as my friend says. No, I'm into the science of this. I'm her bodyguard. I'm not going to go out like Kevin Costner did. But look at that. The lean to the right. Now, let me show you the pose of Dambisa in the New York Times. She knows her power. She knows how the European men have been gawking over her at Oxford University and higher institutions of learning. Okay, that's the pose. Beautiful pose right there, right? That's the pose of Dambisa. Very nice. Cute, attractive. Now here's I think this is the Getty image that the New York Times runs, or they ran it in the New York Times magazine. I showed that one. I think that one came up by accident. That's it right there. The side shot. What's that all about? Come on, y'all. They know what they're doing. So Janine makes a point. I took it somewhere else, Janine. You made one point. I used it to make another point. You feel me? Why? I love this show. I don't think there's any contradiction in me talking about Tiny and Toya or the T.O. show and critiquing it. I don't have to, you know, justify it. I think it's pretty self-evident. And those of you that participate, you enjoy it. But there is a segment of folk who I think hide behind a religious identity or a political ideology in order to keep from dealing with issues like beauty, male-female relationships, the depth of the savagery, I'll say. How's that? There are people who hide behind their religious affiliation or their political ideology to keep from dealing with the depths of the savagery that they see every day out on their neighborhood on a train. I was out walking the block with my friend from Jersey last night. We saw the madness, the savagery of our people. These are the ones who are watching Tiny and Toya. Your political ideology and your religious, your nominal religious claim is not fixing that problem, evidently. Doesn't mean that it's not having an effect. But the condition of our people, the girls, the young boys, it bears witness that you need to understand it better. Because evidently, whatever it is that you're trying to do to fix the problem or correct it and reform the people is not working. Now, I could watch Tiny and Toya just off the merits of me being in the music business. That would justify that. And I could watch the T.O. show just off of being an NFL football fan, Philadelphia Eagles, that he played for. I choose to watch it because I think it teaches life lessons. Again, I'm going to run this from the top. I think this is profound, the steps that Toya is having to go through, deciding whether she wants to write a tell-all novel about her sex life, which is what she knows they want. They want to know. You should see the look on the face of the lady when Toya says, no, I'm not going to write a book like Corinne Steffens, the video vixen. She wants to. Now, Toya's a little naive. They don't care about her life story, but that's what Toya wants to tell. This is very important, particularly for young girls to see who right now probably want to grow up and marry a rapper. Let me make another point real quick before I do that. What I love about Tiny and Toya and T.O. is the same quality that I saw in Michael Jackson, Tupac, and another person. Also, the David of the Bible, the Psalms. You see the outpouring of their heart. They're not hiding their imperfections, their deepest fears. All of that is in your full view. How would you look if your heart was put on full display in public? The person who I love because of this quality as well, it's the one and only Iron Mike Tyson. Speak to us, Mike.
The film is called simply Tyson, and it comes out on DVD August 18th. The subject of that movie joins us now, Mike Tyson, along with the writer and director of the film, James Toback. Mike, you sit down, you watch a film about your life. What was the experience like watching Tyson?
Well, it was something I never expected. I didn't expect to feel so vulnerable there, you know? And it was pretty interesting.
Vulnerable in what way?
Just exposing myself.
Now, James, I mean, obviously there's some challenges in doing a documentary about a figure as polarizing as Mike Tyson. What was the biggest challenge in this project for you?
To find a style in the editing room. We shot for a week and I edited for a year, and it was to take the massive amount of fascinating, exciting, original footage and find a style cinematically to make it not just a talking head movie, but a really dramatic film.
Now, Mike, you had to open up your life, basically, to do this film. Were there any disagreements about what went into the project and what did not?
Well, whatever you asked me, I answered the question.
And why did you decide to do that?
I felt very safe with Jim, and I said, let's go do it.
I mean, it's an unflinching look at your life, the good times and the bad times. How will people feel about you after watching this film, Mike?
I have no idea. I just hope they're pretty positive and enjoy what I have to say. I
mean, and there's some crazy times, some bad times for you. You were always in the news, often for negative stories. When you reflect back, what was it like living your life at 100 miles an hour like that?
Well, I say to myself, what was that all about? What was that all about? You know, what was... what was I thinking that allowed me to tick off like that? What was this all about? Was it that important? Why did it drive me so much?
Now, James, you decided to have Mike do the narration for this entire film. What went into that decision?
The idea was to do a kind of dramatically presented self-portrait, not to do a survey of what everybody thought, but to take the complicated, extreme, and fascinating mind of Mike Tyson and let it, in its own way, be exposed, be revealed.
Mike, what was that like? You go into, I'm sure, an audio booth somewhere, and you start pouring it out. What was that like for you?
I don't know. It was a pretty stimulating feeling.
I love this, man. I'm almost in tears right now. This is what I'm talking about. Maybe the male version of Tiny and Toya. The realness. Listen to his vocabulary. If there was a Mike Tyson reality show, I'd be all over it. Pouring out his heart. Heart on full display like the prophet King David. Pac was like this, too.
How so?
Because you go through a lot of emotional roller coaster rides, and you remember the good times, the bad. You remember when people were alive, and you see some of it. It's an interesting life, you know.
What was the high point of the ride for you, Mike? If you look back on those years.
Man, I don't know. I had many high points. It's like I had many low points.
What was the lowest point for you?
Man, just not caring anymore.
And when did that happen?
Just to have that feeling hovering over you, where you just don't absolutely care anymore. That was a pretty bad low point in my life.
And at what point in your career was that going on?
That's probably the end of my career, my boxing career, but it was just, that's what it came to.
So you didn't care, you basically took the paydays, you knew you had to keep making money and generating income.
Well, not necessarily that, but just in life in general, just didn't care about anything.
All right.
One of the things that Mike says in the movie is the man of extremes, and you see in the film, visually and dramatically, the radical extremes that his life covered, from parades in Moscow and a kind of adulation around the world, to being in solitary confinement in prison, from great championships to sitting on a stool in humiliation. There have been very few figures in sport or anywhere else who've covered the spectrum, the extremes, as dramatically as Mike's life has, and it's all there really in the film.
A fascinating life it has been. James, what did you learn about Mike Tyson? What's the one thing you learned about Mike Tyson in doing this project?
That he had overcame fear, that there was always fear at the core of his being, and that he was an asthmatic kid, a kid who had trouble breathing, who was bullied, and who became this huge, domineering figure through an act of ferocious will, dedication, and discipline, despite a lot of furies in his soul.
Mike, does he have that just about right?
Absolutely.
Now, have you been keeping a low profile over the last couple of years? It seems like there aren't quite as much Mike Tyson stories as there were a few years back.
Well, you know, my life has pretty much changed. I'm married. I put a great deal of effort more on my kids, and I have a different agenda now than I had when I was younger.
I know you're acting a little bit. Saw you in the movie The Hangover this year. What kind of reviews did you get for that role?
I got 5-star. Everything was beautiful and positive.
It was a good movie. I liked what I saw out of you, Mike. Frankly, nice.
Thank you. You
showed great range there.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you're doing some other. You're doing a TV show, The Brothers, coming up.
Yes.
Look at me. I'm promoing all your. This is the stuff you're supposed to get out, Mike. I'm doing all your work for you here. All the promo.
You're doing a good job.
Thank you very much. What are your thoughts on the heavyweight division in boxing right now, Mike? You follow it?
Yeah, not much, but I can see there's nothing happening in the heavyweight division. If there was something happening, I would know who the champion was.
It seems kind of moved these days, that's for sure. Is there one fight to watch these days in any weight class?
I don't know. Mayweather, Pacquiao, I like those guys.
Hopefully a fight between those two will be coming up.
That'd be a good one.
The DVD coming out is Tyson. It comes out on August 18th. Mike Tyson, the subject. The writer-director is James Toback. Gentlemen, we do appreciate you joining us.
Great interview, Iron Mike. X-Men. I'm an X-Men. I'm an X-Men.
Indian whackness in the name of blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
Like a parking lot. Hip-hop addict to me is like sparking rock. I can't wait for a cut like sitting in the barbershop.